would like to welcome all of our auspicious and honored guests to this beautiful home, Krishna Chandra Prabhu Radha Priya Mataji, or Mr. Rishikesh Mafatlal and his family, have so kindly opened the doors to their nice residence to invite all of us to come to purify our lives through the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. This is actually the purpose of a home. According to the Shastra, whether our house is big or small, whether it is ornate or simple, is not what is important. Because the real wealth of a home is not in the size, it is not in the decorations or the type of furniture. The real wealth of a home is what is happening inside of the home. A home which establishes the beautiful form of the Lord, Radha and Krishna, Gaura Nitai, Sitaram, as the prime focus of all activities in the home. That home where the hearing and the chanting of the glories of the Lord, the service of the deities, and especially that home where saintly people are invited, and where guests come to be given prasad, to be given Hari Kirtan and Hari Katha, that home is filled with the treasure of the spiritual world. And it is said that a home that does not properly invite guests to come to hear and chant the glories of the Lord and chant the holy names, that home is no fit place for civilized human being. It is like the hole where a snake goes to live, and nothing more than that. It is a house of poverty. Because we should not be fooled to see the temporary flickering forms of this world as wealth. Real wealth is the blessings of the Lord. Real wealth is the chance to serve the Lord and His devotees. And to spread that wealth is the greatest, supremest charity. This land of India is known as Punya Bhumi because it has been established by persons who live by these principles. Charitable persons whose charity is not simply for the temporary flickering bodies of the needy. That is there and it has importance. But real charity is to feed the starving soul with what it is eternally hungering for. And that is its connection to God. The only possible thing that can satisfy the soul is to be reconnected with God. And in this age of Kali Yuga, that connection is brought about by associating with the Lord's devotees, by hearing His glories, by chanting His holy names. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Gati Aranyata. In this age of Kali Yuga, there is no other proper way of completely purifying our consciousness up to the state of the highest liberation of the spiritual world, other than the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord. But unfortunately, due to subjugation over so many centuries, and due to exploitation, this great land, Punya Bhumi of India, is forgetting its own heritage, its own culture. And people have fallen victims of the illusory propaganda of savage, barbaric, materialistic civilizations. To the extent that the people of India are thinking to be uncivilized, barbaric, degraded is considered civilization. It is modern. And to follow the principles and the traditions of a real civilized, pure life based on these principles that we are speaking, it is something of the past. It has lost its place in society. It is considered sentimental, unproductive. And this is the greatest tragedy on the face of the world. When you have wealth and you lose it, you are the most unfortunate. If you never had wealth, then you're not so unfortunate. India is the land of the greatest wealth. Now, so much wealth is being brought in from America. Everywhere we go, driving down the street, there is IBM, Mobil Oil, Baskin and Robbins, McDonald's, Pennzoil, so many things, Ford. Just driving down the street of Bombay, it is like being in Detroit, Michigan, except not as clean. So we are thinking, now we are making advancement. Now we are becoming wealthy. But actually, America, that land was discovered by Christopher Columbus, who was looking for the riches of India. But somehow or other, to his great misfortune, he landed there instead. It is a fact. That was his journey, to get to India, because that's where the wealth of the world was. That's where the silks and the spices and the jewels, the most exotic foods, the most precious metals. Whoever had the nearest access to India was considered to be the most prosperous nation in the West. But India, its real wealth is not in this. Its real wealth is in its culture, in its spiritual culture, not the culture of pant and coat and nice car and nice computers. We can use those things. You can use a thorn to take another thorn out, but we should know that they're all thorns. We can use those things in God's service, yukta vairagya. But the culture of India is not to eliminate whatever technology may come, but to utilize everything for the purpose of life. The purpose of this human existence is for self-realization, and there is no other purpose. The animals are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Whether you're eating, sleeping, mating, and defending in an ambassador or in a Mercedes-Benz, there's not much difference. Whether you're eating, sleeping, mating, and defending in a suit and tie or in a gumsha, there's not much difference. The culture of India is the culture of human existence. There are 8,400,000 species of life. And in each of these species of life, everyone is struggling hard for their survival. You see the little ants, they're all crawling all over each other, trying to get some food, struggling for their survival. And you see the rats, they're crawling all over each other, running for some food, struggling for survival. And here in India, we see people packed up in trains and packed up in nice, whatever. Whether you're driving big car or small car, traffic jam is the same. Struggling for survival, working so hard, worrying, what about this, what about my money, what about this debt I own, what about my competitors, what about the taxes? Struggling for survival. This is not human civilization. This is just a complex animal civilization. Animals have it better than us because they're simple. But human beings with our big brains, we just complicate this process of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending to such an extent. This complex intelligence we have is meant to use in a very simple way for the goal of life. And the goal of life is to uncover the soul from the layers of ignorance that is obscuring its blissful, joyful state. To liberate the soul from miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death. Old age, disease, and death is not unnatural. Everybody must go through it. Whoever you may be, wherever you may be born, it is a universal principle. Whether you are Pakistani or Indian or Russian or American or African or Australia or Chinese, one thing we know for sure, your body is going to get old, get diseased, and die. So we're all brothers. We all have something very, very intimate in common on the physical level. And a civilization just accepts, yes, that is my fate, that is my destiny. So while this body is somehow surviving, let me enjoy. Let me get more accumulation of wealth so that my senses have more to look at and to touch and to hear and to taste and to smell. Let me get more and more prestige. So people will look at me and think, oh, how great you are. Although by the power of time, I'm getting smaller and smaller and smaller. We want everyone to think we're getting greater, greater, and greater. And then the diseases come upon us. And so many diseases. What can you do? Nothing you can do. You can try. But ultimately, the power of nature will overcome you. So Western civilization, the barbaric civilization of ignorance, simply spends all of its energy somehow trying to improve the standard by which this body can enjoy and somehow or other conquer the obstacles to those enjoyments. But ultimately everyone is conquered. Not in a matter of thousands of years, in a matter of just a few decades. You are born, you may live, if you're very fortunate in this age of Kali Yuga, 60, 70, maybe 80 years. And as you get older, time goes faster. When you're a little boy or a little girl, waiting till next week seems like such a long time. My birthday is next week. Oh, I still have to wait 7 more days. And there's 24 hours in every day, and there's 60 minutes in every hour, and there's 60 seconds in every minute. How will I survive? It's very difficult. But when you get 40 years old, then all of a sudden, the next day, you're 50 years old. And when you're 50 years old, a few minutes later, you're 60 years old. That's the way it seems, doesn't it? And when you're 60 years old, you turn around and you're 70 years old. And then you see everything you've done in your whole life. What is left? Only the hope, since I'm going to lose it all, I just hope that my children can enjoy it. And all the troubles and all anxieties that you went through to accumulate what you have, and all the terrible sufferings of trying to maintain it and preserve it, that's what you give your children. And you're thinking, that's all there is? Now everything is finished. I will pass on all my miseries to you. Is that what human life is for? Atato brahma jigyasa. Now you have attained the human birth. Now is the time to understand that your soul is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Your soul is part of God. This body, it's going to do what it's going to do. So you use it in whatever the best possible way you can for the purpose of your soul. The body is like a motor vehicle. Doesn't matter what kind of car you have. What matters is what you do with it. If you're a bank robber and you rob a bank in an Ambassador or a Maruti or a Mercedes-Benz, when the police come to get you, you can't say, well, I used a Mercedes-Benz, so you should not hurt me. Doesn't matter what kind of vehicle you use. What matters is what you do. So what kind of car we have, what kind of body we have, whether it's woman body or man body or young body or old body or dark body or light body or caste this or that caste, or whether it's from this nation or that nation, or whether it's big or small or strong or weak. Bodies are meant for a purpose. The human form of life, which includes all human existence, is simply meant for self-realization, nothing else. And everything else is meant to only accommodate and facilitate our service to God. And anything that is not used for that purpose, jagyartha kamanon yatra lokomam karma bandana, karma bandana. Anything you do that is not in the consciousness of doing it for the purification of your heart and the service to God and to God's children, it is all only meant for bondage, karma bandana. We should not incriminate ourselves with deeper and deeper states of bondage. We should utilize this body and all the facilities that God has given us by His grace for the purpose of life, to reawaken our original dormant spiritual consciousness, or Krishna consciousness. And that is called intelligence. One who has that understanding is intelligent. It is not a matter of BABS, MAMS, PhD, or whatever else. That is not a sign of intelligence. That is just a sign that you have some data in the memory bank of your brain. But a computer is not intelligent. A computer just has data. Intelligence is how you use your free will. If you use your free will to incriminate yourself in karmic laws, that is called ignorance. If you use your free will in all of the skills, education, and facilities you have, whatever age, whatever condition it's in, you use it for self-realization, for purification, for devotion to God, and charity, charity of giving God's inspiration to others, that is real intelligence. And that intelligence is so deeply required in this world today. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains who is an educated person. Who knows the verse where Krishna describes who is an educated person? Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihastini suni chaiva svapakicha pandita samadarshana. An educated person is not someone who can manipulate material nature in various ways. Krishna says, what is a real educated person? The standard that we should all strive for if we want to actually be called human beings. One who sees all living beings with equal vision. One who sees whether one is a Brahman or a Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra. One who is whether one is from no caste, Chandala, or an elephant, or a cow, or a dog. He sees all with equal vision. Why? Because he understands his own identity as a spirit soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, Krishna. Therefore, he sees that same qualitative spiritual spark in every living being. Wherever there is life, that is the manifestation of a part of God. Even in the blade of grass, we see is a beloved brother or sister, a part of God. And therefore we do not discriminate. Therefore, seeing everyone as a part of God, we feel ourselves a humble, compassionate servant of every living entity. We see the spiritual unity in all creation. That is truth. And that truth is knowledge. And a person who has that perception is educated, is learned. Whether he is a businessman, whether he is a politician, whether she is a housewife, or a student, or an architect, or an engineer, or a public servant, whether one is working in the sanitation division or the medical division, whether one is a brahmachari, a grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, a sadhu, it doesn't matter. These are all necessary, important occupational functions within society. But what makes it human, what makes it an educated society, is to the degree that everyone is working together with this vision. Pursuing truth, not pursuing ignorance. That is the greatest requirement in this world. Because all of our hopes and attempts for peace must fail unless we have this education. Unless we see the harmony in everything and everyone in the light that all living beings are part of God. And we stop discriminating on the basis of the superficial physical or mental conditions, then we are doomed to a life of conflict, violence, and suffering. And you can make any arrangement you want, but without this vision, there will only be disunity. And that is a fact. India was under the rule of the British. So by some political arrangements, somehow or other, you got independence. 1947 was it? Something like 1947. And so you're independent. So is there more unity now? The first thing that happened after independence was partition. What does partition mean? It means disunity. And then so many riots and so many wars and so many killings between this religion and that religion, between this the high castes and the low castes. and Punjab wants further disunity, and Andhra Pradesh, there's so much disunity, in Kashmir, there's so much disunity. So much dedication, so much striving, risking your life for independence. And what is your country now? There's no harmony. Nobody trusts anybody, practically. And it is not only India, it is everywhere. Whether you call yourselves capitalists or communists or socialists, Srila Prabhupada, when Guru Maharaj came to New York City, he was walking down First Avenue and he saw the United Nations building. Big, magnificent structure. And every time he would go down the street, he would see more flags. Because every nation that's in the United Nations has a flag waving outside in the wind. And in New York City, waving outside in the winds means getting all pollution all over it. And then pigeons, they love flagpoles. And you know what they do to the flags when they sit on the flagpole. So every time he would walk by, he would see more flags. So people were thinking, oh, just see how the United Nations is attracting so many nations to be united. Prabhupada explained, the more flags, that means the more disunity. Just the conception of a flag means you're separate from someone else. I have my interests and you have your interests, and we will bark like dogs if somehow or other there's a conflict of interests. Because this is not the standard by which there can be harmony or peace. Ijavanaya sampani brahmani gavihastini sunichaiva svapakicha pandita samadarshana. A person who is learned is one who understands that every living being is part of God. That it is the soul within ourselves and the soul within others that is the real spiritual force, the person. And that soul, after death, it changes into another body, and then another death, and it changes into another body, and another death, it changes into another body. Why should we be so attached to the body? Use it for its purpose and get out of this material cycle of birth and death. Go back home, back to Godhead. That is education. And this is the greatest need in society. Kumara acharit pragyo dharman bhagavataniya. This Bhagavad Dharma is very much required to be learned, whatever age we may be. Prahlad Maharaj told his 5-year-old friends, it's becoming late, don't waste any more time. We're telling our children, don't take religion too seriously. Because you have to worry about your economic situation in life. From the age of 5, we're telling them, study, get your good grades, learn your trade. Don't worry about religion until you graduate. And you graduate, then you get married. Don't worry about religion. A little piety, a little puja is all right. Sprinkle it on. But don't take too much. This is what pious India has become today. That you just put all your energy into making a whole preparation for material prosperity and enjoyment. And if you're pious, you sprinkle a few grains of religion on it, just to give it some flavor. But that is not Punya Bhumi. From the age of 5 to the child in the womb, we should be training our children. What is the goal of life? You are not this body, you are the eternal soul. Make Krishna the object and goal of your life. And you can go to school and you can get your education and you can get your occupation, but never forget its purpose. Never forget that any moment death will come. And do it all in the best interests of your soul, by always remembering the Lord through chanting his holy name. Today is the appearance day of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. He was such a personality that he was ready to give his life to help anyone to find the peace, the joy, and the love of God within their lives. It is explained how even the dacoits, nobody likes dacoits except other dacoits, and even dacoits don't like each other. So there was a very bad dacoit. He was the king of the dacoits. His name was Chandarai. And he had a very large army of murderers and thieves who would do anything he said. They would rob, they would steal, they would kill, they would set houses on fire, anything, as long as they could get some money. And they worshipped the goddess Bhagavati or Durga. And their goal of worshipping goddess Durga was to empower them, to be able to overcome all piety and to somehow or other become victorious over all goodness and be able to conquer anyone for their illicit purposes. We see many people throughout history worship demigods for their own selfish interests. Ravana worshipped Shankar. Hiranyakashipu worshipped Brahma. So Chandrai was worshipping Durga. And he was terrifying everyone. Even the police, even the kings, nobody could dare stand before him. Because he was so expert with weapons. And his gang of thieves were so expert at fighting with weapons and deceiving people that even the armies of the kings would not go near them. They were terrified. And people just lived in fear that when will we be next? Nothing they could do. So one day when he was doing puja to goddess Durga, she decided to be merciful upon him. And she sent a ghost to haunt him, a Brahmin ghost. And this ghost was just causing him such terrible anxiety. Everything was going wrong. He was being tormented. He was being tortured. Some people ask, do you believe in ghosts? It doesn't matter whether you believe or not. Practically the whole world is being haunted by mysterious beings. We don't even know who they are. They just somehow enter into us and cause our mind to be crazy and strange, and influence us with so many illicit desires. Sometimes you become mad. So he was becoming mad, and he couldn't fight against his ghost because all his weapons, he couldn't see it. So even though he was accumulating so much money and so much wealth and so much power, he was completely a frustrated person. His mind was just going wild. Some of you have experienced mind going wild. You can have everything you want, But if one little thing goes wrong, you can't enjoy anything. That's the nature of the mind. You can have a beautiful home, you can have wonderful family, you can have everything, but one thing goes wrong in your life, and everything is just miserable. Your mind just won't let you enjoy or find peace, no matter what else is there. That's the nature of the mind. What to speak when a terrible Rakshasa ghost is haunting your mind? So he was just going crazy, wild, suffering, miserable. And then Goddess Durga told him that the only shelter is you have to go to Narottam Das Thakur, who is my lord. He is the worshipper of my lord. He is a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. And if I worship the feet of such pure devotees of Krishna. So if you take shelter of him, then you will be delivered. In fact, she said, I sent this ghost out of my love for you. Because I knew if you were not miserable and frustrated, suffering to the point where you couldn't even tolerate life, I knew you'd have to come to that point before you would come to your senses and go to Krishna for shelter. So this is my mercy. So he understood. And he went to Narottam Das Thakur, and he fell at his lotus feet and begged him, please, let me surrender my life to your instructions. And Narottam Das Thakur explained to him, give up your dacoit occupation, and you be a humble servant of all human society. And I'll tell you how. Whoever you meet, wherever you go, till teach them this wonderful chanting of Krishna's holy name.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
He instructed him in the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Chandrai became a very gentle, pious, humble devotee. He was very respectful to all, very compassionate, crying when he saw other people suffering, trying to help them. And then he began to preach to all the other dacoits. And they all became devotees of the Lord. And then, as devotees, they all came to Narottam Das Thakur. And they were all listening to his Bhagavad Katha. They were all participating in his wonderful kirtans. They were all living according to the highest, purest standards of morality. And there was a Yavana king was very envious, and he was always an enemy of this dacoit Chandrai. So he heard that now he's very gentle, now he doesn't have any more weapons, so now is a good time to arrest him and torture him. So he had him arrested, and they started torturing him. But he just told the king, this is very nice. Due to all the misdeeds I have performed in the past, I deserve so much worse. So go on torturing me. So the king was thinking, what is the use of torture if he likes to be tortured? What can you do to a devotee? You cannot do anything to a devotee because devotees are detached. So he said, I will put him in prison. So he put him in prison. And Chandrai was just in prison, preaching to everybody else in prison. Let us chant the holy names of the Lord.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
The king was so angry. He likes prison. What's the use of prison if you like prison? Prison is for punishment. But he was thinking, all the harm I has caused to others, this is God's mercy that he's giving me some reaction, but I deserve so much worse. So please, my dear king, go on. When the king saw how humble he was, how gentle he was, his heart softened. And he fell down and begged forgiveness from Chandrai and released him. And Chandrai returned to Narottam Das Thakur, and Narottam Das Thakur very happily embraced him and led him a nice kirtan of the holy names. And all these other dacoits from all other provinces with their leaders, they were thinking, what happened to Chandrai? Let's go see. And they would come. And within a few days, they were all taking diksha from Narottam Das Thakur. And in this way, the rogues and thieves that were terrorizing society were going around from town to town, village to village, hundreds of them, just humbly serving society as such gentle devotees. Wherever they went, in large parties, they were all dancing and singing and inviting everyone, dance and sing the holy names, giving the greatest charity of the chanting of the Maha Mantra.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
This is the greatest need in society. Today, in cities, you practically have to be a dacoit just to survive. Someone was telling me today that unless I do immoral, illegal things, I can't keep my job because everybody else is doing it. And if I don't do it, they'll see me as a threat and they'll kick me out. I have to do it. This is what society's coming to. In a pious society, how to say it? In a religious or pious society, you have to, in a very deceiving way, think of various methods to cheat, to be dishonest. But in a corrupt society, you have to really, really tax your brain to somehow or other deceive people in such a way that you could be honest and get away with it. Very difficult. But that is Kali Yuga. But Narottam Das Thakur, he took the most dishonest people and he transformed them, not by some social arrangement of give rights to the dacoits. They're a downtrodden class, give them rights. Not like that. What he did is he changed their hearts. He purified their souls. And he made them gentle, where they were seeing every living being, whether they were a Brahmin or whether they were an elephant or a cow or a dog eater. They were seeing them all as their masters, Prabhu, because they were all part of God. And with love and compassion, they were a servant of everyone. That is the most required education for people of all ages within society, because that is what will bring about peace, harmony, and transcendental love. We read this beautiful song by Narottam Das Thakur. The translation is both beautiful and illuminating to the heart. O Lord Hari, my life I've simply spoiled. Although I've taken this rare human birth, like a miser, I've not served my Lord. I have no love for you, Radha and Krishna. and so quite purposefully I have drunk poison. From Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual world, comes the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Such spiritual sounds vibrate only from the planets of God. How unlucky that I have no taste for nectar such as this, no love for transcendental bliss. All matter is on blazing fire, and it is always burning my heart. Though ablaze, I have no desire to escape. Though my mind and body burn, I remain bound, trying to enjoy this holocaust. Lord Chaitanya, son of Mother Sachi, formerly son of Nanda Maharaj, has now appeared with Lord Nityananda, formerly Balaram. They come chanting the holy names, Hari Rama Krishna. Chanting Krishna's names, they extricate all kinds of fallen, sinful entities from the blaze of this dark age of iron. Even two drunkards, Jagai and Madhai, are delivered, purified by their songs. My Lord Krishna, son of Nanda Maharaj, now you are before me with Radharani, daughter of King Vrishabhanu. O Lord, please cast your glance of mercy upon me. I, Narottam Das, now plead to you, Lord. Now I surrender to you fully. Please do not kick Narottam Das away, for he has no shelter but your lotus feet. Glance mercifully, O Lord, glance mercifully on Narottam Das, who is pleading at your feet. Shri Narottam Das Thakur Ki.